Welcome to the SEI podcast series, a production of the Carnegie Mellon University Software Engineering Institute. The SEI is a federally funded research and development center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. A transcript of today's podcast is posted on the SEI website at sei.cmu.edu/podcasts. My name is Suzanne Miller. Today I am pleased to introduce you to myself and Marianne Lapham. Welcome to our ongoing series exploring Agile principles and their application across the Department of Defense. In today's installment, we explore the seventh Agile principle: working software is the primary measure of progress. But first, a little bit about Marianne and me. Marianne's work focuses on supporting and improving the acquisition of software-intensive systems. For Department of Defense programs, this means assisting and advising on software issues at the system or segment level. In addition, she leads research into software topics that are germane to acquisition of software-intensive systems, like agile methods. My research focuses on synthesizing effective technology transition and management practices from research and industry into effective techniques for use of agile and lean methods in regulated settings like the DoD. This is our seventh podcast exploring the real-world application of Agile principles in Department of Defense settings. If you like what you hear today, there are already six podcasts in this series, and we will eventually have 12 in all, one for each Agile principle behind the Agile Manifesto. As a reminder, the four values and 12 principles of the Agile Manifesto can be found at www.agilemanifesto.org. Today, Marianne, let's talk about that seventh principle. Working software is the primary measure of progress. Take it away.
Oh, wow. I don't know where to begin, mainly because in a typical DoD, we'll pick on them, project, you don't get working software till almost the end. I mean, not working software that somebody can take out and take for a spin.
Yep.
This is so different, and yet It's a wonderful thing
to be. It's different from Big Bang, but let's be
Big Bang,
fair,
right?
There are incremental designs.
There are incremental designs.
That aren't agile that can produce
true.
Software.
That's true.
But it's that primary.
It's
thing.
The primary thing that, you mean I can actually have some software in 3 to 6 months that I can try out, and I don't wait to the very end to integrate everything together. So I find out early on what my integration risks are and some of my other testing risks and other things that I forgot. Because as we all know, even though in a traditional environment, all the requirements are defined up front, there's always that one or two or three or five things.
Or more.
Or more, yes, that we forget and we add in. And the later you add them in, the more problems it's going to cause, either for integration or changing of a design or architecture, all those things that cost money. But to have actual working software where you can give it to your end user and let them take it out for a spin and see if it really works, and then find out, well, yeah, I like that, but can we do this different in the next piece that you're going to build and that different over there? And, oh, we need to add this.
Or this technology has changed and you can't rely on it being there anymore.
Right.
All these kinds of things play into this.
Yeah.
Now, the thing that was striking to me the first time I read this when I was, you know, way back in the day and thinking about the projects that I had worked on was the aspect of how I get measured, right? When you're a software programmer, when you're a coder, even as a designer, you don't get measured on the working software, right? Until the very end. How many defects, all that kind of stuff. But there's a huge amount of time where you're spending your time working on design documents, working on requirements refinement, working on interface descriptions, working on everything, essentially everything but the software itself. So this mindset that working software essentially takes precedence over some of the other artifacts that we're accustomed to, this is a very big shift.
It is
for
a big
our DoD
shift.
Audience.
A big shift. And the other thing that makes me think when you start talking about measuring, most of the very large systems by mandate are required to do earned value management. And they very, you know, it's a fairly rigid system where everything's
sure.
defined and you don't change things. But if you're going to do it on working software,
and if you're allowed to change
and
the
you're
requirements
allowed to change
at the
things,
low level.
Then how does that go?
Right.
You know, that has all kinds of implications on how you do that. And there's a lot of people out there working on that particular problem because it is an issue. But it depends on what level you measure. If you measure at a high enough level, like at the release level, not at the sprint level, where a release is multiple sprints that
that actually cohere. Yeah. I want to be clear about something to our audience. We are not naively saying that you are going to get an entire software system
in
3 months or even 6 months. But the whole Agile design philosophy is to look at, instead of looking sort of horizontally across a layer from an architectural viewpoint, you try to look vertically. You try to say, well, this thread, if I can do this piece, if I can tell you how this service is going to work,
right, a complete
then you can
feature.
You can give me feedback,
right,
instead of me giving you the whole user interface or giving you the whole database.
So
layer.
Maybe you have
so
a...
that's a very different way
right,
of
it is.
Implementing.
You're going vertically as opposed to horizontally. So vertically, you cut across all the different pieces and parts that would make up a feature, and you see if they all, one, play together, two, give you the kind of results you're expecting, as opposed to, as you said, put in all the user interfaces and then add the database and the
and
other
the communication
pieces
layer
and all that other stuff, and then find out, oh, that doesn't work so well. But if you take one feature, if you will, or mission thread, and see how
mission
it works.
Mission thread is a nice way to do this.
See how it works across all the different pieces and have actual working, small piece, but a working piece. And then you add to it, so you have to figure out, how am I going to do this? How do I chunk it up so I
so this has architectural implications.
Yes.
If I'm going to go this way and I'm going to try and focus on working software early, I have to have enough architecture so that I've got confidence that what I'm doing is actually going to play with the other pieces, because software doesn't exist in a vacuum. It exists with other elements of the system. And I've also got to make sure that I communicate with my architecture folks so that as they're building out the architecture, if I find out things in implementation that don't work, I can't connect this service to that service with the kind of interface that they have said we should use, for example. I've got to have a path for communicating with them. So this goes into some of the cross-functional team kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, this has implications across a lot of aspects.
Yes.
And it's, to me, it's one of the defining elements of what's different. People ask us all the time, what's different about the incremental design and incremental build the way that it's defined in some of the DoD guidance, like 5000.2 does have guidance on incremental.
But it's not incremental and iterative.
It's not iterative, and it doesn't focus on this primacy of working software as the way that you are trying to move things forward.
And if you stop and think about working software, well, if it's just a small program, that's probably not a big deal. But when you get into some of the medium to larger size programs where there's more than one team, because there has to be, and a lot of people are trying to use Agile, and there's some methods out there like SAFe and DSDM, which is, you know, can
and
be used.
Discipline Agile.
And Discipline Agile and all those things. They are incorporating architecture runways, making sure your architecture is there when you need it. And working software isn't necessarily working for... my question is, working for whom? What you want to build first, usually, is the infrastructure so that other people can plug into it. So your first...
It might be working for other teams sometimes.
Could be working for other teams. You're building the infrastructure so the other teams can build upon it. So it's working structure for somebody that can use it, but it may not be the end product yet. And I've seen that
it's
several
times.
It's
desirable to get the end user in there, but you can't always get that right.
Yeah, well, not until you get some kind of infrastructure, especially for a larger program in
place. I'm going to a couple of examples. We had one example that Mary and I both worked on where the team was trying to do this, and they were doing exactly what she said. They were building the infrastructure first based on the architecture, and so that everybody would have a chance in the team to work against it and look at how their requirements played and all that kind of stuff. And we were there to help them with get ready for a preliminary design review, and which is traditionally a review of documents.
Mm-hmm.
But this team had a mix of infrastructure elements that were already built and documents. But the documents were, you know, as is typical in Agile, they were not as refined in terms of their detail because you're trying to get feedback the whole
time.
Well,
some were. It was interesting there. Not only did you have some working software, but you had documents that were ready for PDR, like you normally expect. And there were some documents that would be what you would expect at a normal CDR.
Right,
and then there was
critical design review.
So
they were more detailed.
More detailed. And then you'd have some that nobody had even worked on yet because they were so far down the road of what sprint they were going to be in.
Or even what release.
Yeah, or what release. We're not going to get to those until next month or next year even, depending on... So it was fascinating, and then try to get your user community that typically comes to these milestone reviews to understand this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there were some roles that are accustomed to seeing the entire software spec, all in great levels of detail, that were very upset, quite frankly, that they didn't have a chance to, they didn't have everything they were accustomed to looking at. And some of them were excited about the fact that, yeah, but wow, we've got this piece of the infrastructure. We can do an even better job of reviewing because we can see
where
they're really going. And then there were others that wanted to have nothing to do with the working software. All they wanted to look at was the document. So this is a case where the cultural aspects of Agile are sometimes ahead of where some of the stakeholders are in the acquisition process. And this working software principle really brings that to the forefront when you see
very that. Very fast. And it's fascinating to watch the different reactions. Some people are like, wow, yeah, this is really cool.
Yeah.
And then you have the others who sit back and go, well, they're not going to get my pass on this because it's not have. And so depending on who gets the final say, you either have a very successful milestone review in an Agile environment, or you spend lots and lots of money to get all the documentation that you would expect in a traditional environment,
right,
adding costs to what you thought was going to
be
something different.
We have another Agile program that we've worked with that takes this very much to heart. They have user involvement every 6 months. They have essentially program management review where they demonstrate everything that's in work, anybody that is providing them funding, and they have several MAGCOMs that provide their major commands that provide their funding, their military system. And they all come together and they get to see everything and provide their feedback. And they each, based on how much money they've spent, they get bucks, you know, that are for the system bucks, that are things they can spend to get changes made. And it's quite interesting to watch that negotiation go on. But it's all based on we're looking at something real.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is one of the biggest attractions for end users and acquirers that are working in this space, is I get to, what we call in the Agile community, I get to fail fast. If we're going in the wrong direction, we know it really fast because people see something and go, wait, can't do that, and here's why. And it's something that I've seen cases where things have come out in these kinds of reviews that never would have come out in a documentation review or technical interchange meeting because you didn't have the level of insight that using the software gives you, as opposed to just looking at people writing about how the software is going to work.
Right. And in those instances, you've saved yourself time, money, lots of heartache, because if you don't, normally you wouldn't see those kinds of issues until the big bang integration towards the end. And by then, you're so far down a path of oops. And so you didn't have to fix it, and it's going to take time and money and patience. And
you may not be able to fix everything
That's
in
true.
Time, and you may have certification issues and all those other kinds of things
right.
that come down. So let's talk a minute about how do you make this a successful practice in your acquisition? How do you make working software the primary measure of progress?
My immediate answer is you have to plan for it. And contrary to what a lot of people think, Agile, that's just that crazy unplanned for cowboy. Yes.
And we both said that at the same time.
How often have we heard that?
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
cowboys. And my immediate response to cowboy is, yes, that's interesting. However, if you are consistently delivering working software, meaning tested, ready to go out in the field, now, minus a CNA, certification accreditation, that's an issue.
Whole different thing.
Different thing. But if you're just having to have working software that's been tested and is verified, ready to go, how can you do that consistently every 2 to 4 weeks if you don't have a plan, if you aren't structured and disciplined?
That's right. And transparent and visible
right.
and all the other principles that we've
so
been talking about.
So you can't not plan and be agile. A lot of people say, well, I'm agile. Until you really look at what they're doing, and they're not.
And I always go back to the Eisenhower quote about how the plan is not what's important, it's the planning.
Yes.
You know, and that's, I think, the difference that we see in good agile teams is they take the planning very seriously. They plan every 2 weeks. You know, or however long their increments are, their iterations are. But the point is that it's a different kind of planning. It's not the big bang, I'm going to plan every detail, you know, 6 years before I actually am going to actually execute that, which is an impossible situation to put people in. This is a whole different, so the planning is iterative as well as
right.
the execution.
And it's planning for the next 2 weeks. Now, even in normal, ordinary circumstances, can you really plan what you're going to be doing 5 years from now in gory detail? And it never changes?
Not in my life.
But you could probably plan what's going to happen in the next 2 weeks.
Closer.
A lot closer, depending on other...
Depending on what else is going on. But the point, and actually that's really the reality of it, is even
yeah.
within, we set the boundaries of an iteration because we say, well, we think the next 2 weeks it's safe, right, for us to be able to say we're not going to allow any changes over the next 2 weeks. You get up to a month, and now somebody's going to be getting on my case to do something different quite frequently. And that's actually one of the you know, well, other times we've talked about iteration length, but that's one of the reasons for that 2 weeks, is it short enough that it's likely that you're going to not get bothered by new things in that time frame, but it's long enough to actually get something done if you're working intensely, which most teams
right.
are.
And not be bothered by other outside influences is a really difficult thing in most environments today.
So we've explored this in a little bit of detail, although this is one of the ones that I think we could probably do 6 or 7 podcasts just on this one. But we'll go ahead and stop it here. And I want to thank you, Marianne, as always, for joining us today.
Very welcome.
We do have the next episode. We'll be exploring the 8th Agile principles, and it relates to something I was just saying, is that Agile processes promote sustainable development. The sponsors, developers, and users should be able to maintain a constant pace indefinitely. So we'll get more into how do you craft your release times and your iteration times so that you can have sustainable development, because that's a very important aspect of this. Listings for papers, blog posts, and podcasts related to the SEI research on Agile adoption and DoD can be found at sei.cmu.edu/acquisition/research. If you'd like more information about the SEI's recent publications in all areas of our work, you can download all of our technical reports and notes at sei.cmu.edu/library/reports-papers.cfm. This podcast is available on the SEI website at sei.cmu.edu/podcasts and on Carnegie Mellon University's iTunes U site. As always, if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to email us at info@sei.cmu.edu. Thank you for listening.